Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and I got it done. I sent my email today, I want to write software, not this kind of writing, because it went well Monday. It didn't go so well Tuesday. It went only fair today, but it wasn't trivial stuff, and you know, I wonder. I just wonder to what degree. I want to know where I'm wrong in what I'm pursuing. I want to have a little bit of encouragement if what I'm pursuing is right. Anyway, it's been difficult. One of the things that, you know, because when I wrote about Shofar book, you know, shofarnexus.com/toy has basically two primary sections, one on principle, one on profit. I wrote the profit one today, and it's kind of because I was, you know, hopefully semi-clear at least on some of the things that, you know, tapping into a multi-billion dollar market could provide a return, but you have to want it. And I need two things. I need the resources to get there and someone else to push it. But, you know, my heart isn't show for a book. One line I thought was pretty good. There's also desire to provide tools to allow comparisons of related concepts and passages within text and between texts. An obvious example is Luke 23:46, where we read Jesus breathed his last, and compare that to Surah 4:157. They did not kill him, nor did they crucify him, though it was made to appear like that to them. And, you know, I take that as trivia. I've been through that many times. But the thing that's I find important is that most people haven't. And that's, see, one of the things I learned long ago is that one of the ways that reduces your ability to proclaim a thought or to be a good teacher, even though you're not supposed to take that title, is since you know it, you assume others do. And that's that is a difficulty. So when I wrote that line, it was kind of like, well, that's obvious, you know, because, you know, an obvious example is, and maybe because where are the obvious examples that somebody else would say, I haven't got a clue about? And of course, if you asked me about this 10 years ago, really? And that's the thing that's important. But, you know, the other thing, because it has been a really big part of what has been driving me. You know, obviously, if you look at the photo there, the photo there, and over there. But I did Stand with the Whistleblower, that's this section. The first paragraph. As a self-described repeat offender, there is a particular passion to be a support for the whistleblower. Consider a list of names that to varying degrees would fit the title of whistleblower. Julian Assange, William Binney, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Smedley Butler, Thomas Drake, Daniel Ellsberg, Fritz Erba, Lavoie Finnegan, Daniel Hale, Michael Hastings, Robert Hulligan, Barry Jennings, John Kiriakou, Private Manning, Carrie Mullis, Seth Rich, William Rodriguez, Michael Schuer, Edward Snowden, Aaron Schwartz, Russell Tice, Gary Webb, Richard Vermbrandt, Harry Wu, and me. You know, because I started putting that list together, and the way I put that list together is I went through the list of, because, you know, I have all my media stuff, and I just simply went to the list of media things that are broken up, because some of them are broken up by names. And basically, well, you know, most of these I had, you know, a section, because I had, you know, some documents, some video and whatnot from them. And again, the term whistleblower could be broad because, you know, the first, you know, it's in alphabetical order. The first one, Julian Assange, is not the whistleblower, but the publisher. But he's paying the price. Bonhoeffer is someone who pointed out issues. And so it's kind of loose. Smedley Butler was indeed a whistleblower, in a very real sense. So forth. You know, some I was kind of wondering about. Lavoie Finicum is the gentleman who was standing against the state doing various things about the land issues with farm animals back, you know, in Nevada and California, or just Nevada anyway. And they shot and killed him. On video. I've got the video, actually. You know, and it's kind of like the man was assassinated, but by our beloved state. People like Michael Hastings. You know, because there these are, you know, there's lots of reporters. And Michael Hastings. There's Gary Webb and whatnot. You know, Gary Webb is one who committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice. You know, again, you got to think about that one. you know, that's skill. and of course, somebody like Seth Rich, there's question, because there is a whole lot of people say no, evidence, and including one gentleman who said he was the one that took the USB drive from his hand to Julian Assange's hand directly. I don't remember who it was, but I think I have the video of that. But you know, he was shot in the back, and it looked like a robbery. Was it a robbery? What is it? Just convenient, so there are issues. And then, of course, Michael Hastings, you know, just drives down the street in the middle of the night at high speed and runs into a tree after he gets off the phone saying, "I'm on the biggest story of my life." Like, you know, anyway, but, you know, people like, William Binney, Russell Tice, and whatnot, this is the leaks of, you know, in reference to what the NSA does. And what I did after I wrote that, well, because, you know, I did the, well, to various degrees, they were persecuted, abandoned, tortured, imprisoned, or assassinated. What you will find in the list is a common trait of men who have a character flaws. They did stupid things before, during, or after their saga. But what they did was probably not wrong, but rather a very good thing. I contend we must walk with them, not abandon them. But there are others in this list. There are those who are down the street or on the other side of town that will not make the news. What they exposed may be trifle or significant, but they did it, and may be paying the cost. See, that's the thing that has really got to me. I can use the names that a lot of people will know, but it's the guy down the street. Need to stand with him too, even though he doesn't make the news. That's really, really been an important thing. But there are other costs that are in there are others that are in the future. Perhaps we can keep them safer. There are so many things I probably disagree with them on, but I want to stand with them. Do you? And then I added a 34-minute video that gives an idea of part of my saga and why I sang with the whistleblower can be found at, and the link. It's one of the promise videos. And I watched it again. And, you know, it's the one, Introduction 5, West Star and Collateral Murder. Because the more I look at the various parts, you know, because I didn't know what was going on at the time, but the more I then piece together what happened, and especially the attitudes of the people I was dealing with. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it was early on. Yeah, I could see there were issues here about money, but then it became a whole lot more clear after some years. But then to find out, you know, the proximity to collateral murder and the timing. Because again, the date of the collateral murder event, July 12th, 2007. The date my wife abandoned me, July 12th, 2012. You know, when I found that out, which was not too long ago, when I put those pieces together, maybe a year ago, that really hit hard. That really hit hard. I am hoping that either somebody I send an email to, I still use my normal Outlook email because the Shofar Nexus is sending emails, but there's this domain key stuff that is not in place yet. And with the absence of that, a lot of times it'll end up in spam. So, I have a Gmail account. Yeah, it's the shofarportfolio@gmail, I think. I don't remember where Shofar Next. I think Shofar Portfolio. I don't remember. But anyway, so I have that. I've been using that because I can send an email to that, and it shows up in spam. And I say, aha. So, you know, it's a great test. But I'm hoping somebody I send it to, or somebody that they will send it to, will finally make a connection with me. You know, besides obviously the little issue of I want to eat, but I made it very clear. You know, I think about it, you know, my arms are stronger, my stomach is stronger, my legs are stronger than I think any time in my life. But I also know, you know, and, you know, 10 years ago, I didn't do 1,000 jumping jacks a day. But I'm in good shape. But I also know, you know, for example, sometimes my foot, it feels like it's fractured, especially when I start my jumping jacks in the morning. It feels like it's fractured. After I start, it goes away. But, you know, it's that issue. Or, and especially happens when I walk to Publix. It seems I walk to Publix, I get there, and then when I get out, I think maybe out when it's cold, my left hip hurts, especially then. And this happened last year and this year during the winter months. And, you know, I do wonder, these to me are little subtle signs saying, you know, you may be healthy, but your body is not the same body it was 40 years ago. So these things are on my mind, you know, and other things. A week or so ago, I was standing on my stand-up monitors doing some work, and I was looking at the screen, and suddenly everything blurred for a moment. It's kind of like, that could be an indication of a problem. And these things concern me. So The idea that my 3 score and 10 is getting close is very much in my mind. And so I've kind of resolved, I'm working on this. I'm going to try to get this done. And I may have some difficulties monetarily, especially in the short run, but I got to get it working. I have to do this. One other thought on something different, but I mentioned it yesterday. The images from the James Webb Telescope and that related to this idea of these exoplanets, which actually has been discussed for some time, because there's a particular place that has become well noted, and it's called the TRAPPIST-1 system, and I have the picture here of it, and they show the sun and, as I described, seven planets, and you know, beautiful art and whatnot, and it looks just magnificent. But one of the things, and you know, this is your tax dollars at work. They have a website where it's kind of a 3D animation, and you can move around and see all these things. And it's like, ooh, look, I'm looking at a planet far away. But when you go to there, they do put a disclaimer there that you have to click through. You are viewing an artist's impression of what an exoplanet surface might look like based on limited data. No actual images of this planet exist. You know, again, it's this a few pixel image. That's all they have. Because it's the some of the techniques that are used is you have a star or sun, and you have maybe a reasonable size, 20 pixels, 50 pixels, whatever, 100 pixels, whatever, of the sun, of an image of the star. And you see a tiny little dark spot go across. And you say, ah, I am being blocked from seeing the star fully by something in between. And if you see it move and then potentially see a bright spot because of the reflection once it moves past, you may say, ah, a planet. And that's roughly what they're going on. And so you take that and you come up with these images. And the big concern is, you know, it's like when I was a kid, you know, my parents would have grown up seeing, was it Buck Rogers in the 21st century or something of that nature? And, you know, it looked kind of, you know, it was really, you know, or it's the, you know, the first, is it the first film? Silent movie that was done? Trip to the Moon. I actually have it. and it's easy to find on YouTube, I'm sure. I think this is where I got it. Where, you know, a group of people that get on this. And what that was this big, huge cannon kind of thing. And they blew them off into the moon. And, you know, they squish in the moon. And it is kind of like squishing the cheese. And they get out. They walk around. They talk to people there on the moon and whatnot. And they get back in their ship. And they kind of push it off. And it falls back. You know, it's really, you know, it's remarkably silly, especially from the context of today. But you think about that. You think of the Buck Rogers stuff. And the impression that it left in people's mind. Then you go to when I was a kid, and, you know, first it was Star Trek. Because, I mean, for me, and Lost in Space. Lost in Space, in a sense, might have been better because it wasn't as, it wasn't quite as fantastic. It was fantastic, and, you know, but it wasn't as, we're meeting all sorts of aliens and whatnot. It was more it was far more subtle. You know, a family in a spaceship. You know, who going off and you know, there was the robot and whatnot. But anyway, that you know, that was what I grew up with. But then, of course, Star Trek, that was a big deal. And it is unambiguous. Part of the purpose behind that was social engineering. I mean, it's basically admitted. Star Wars, even more so. And, you know, I didn't see that initially. Well, the first time I wondered about whether this is social engineering, wouldn't use the term at the time, but I was obviously fairly young, you know, mid-60s, and the episode came up where you had the one guy who was white on one side, black on the other, vertically split. The other guy was the other way around. And the whole segment, that whole hour-long program was the idea of they hated each other and so forth. Because that man is white or black on the wrong side. I forget the how it was expressed. And, you know, they did images, you know, as they're running through the hallways showing image, you know, kind of flashback images of riots and whatnot. And, you know, it was kind of like, I know what they're doing. They're trying to lecture me on black-white relationships. And, you know, so, you know, and obviously I became semi-involved in that many years later. But I saw that they were making a point, had nothing to do about being in outer space. So it was social engineering. And I didn't understand at the time. Actually, I was kind of disappointed but then if you, you know, when I think back at some of the other programs, there was, you know, feminism was very much there. There was, well, I do remember the one episode of they went to a planet and they were talking about, you know, they're seeing a, you know, a less, refined civilization, earlier civilization. And of course they would speak English just like all civilizations around the, you know, it's good, you know, but of course, you know, which you compromise for television, but you compromise so much. And of course, all these places have the normal breathable atmosphere and all, you know, vegetation looks just like Earth, just like what you expect. Right. Yeah. But, they were talking about, they were worshiping the sun. And if I recall correctly, they actually even, you know, did the gesture pointing to about. And when we were at, you know, the epilogue portion, the end of the program, all, you know, whatever issue was resolved, and it was Captain Kirk talking with Uhura, the lady that did all the you know, communications stuff, and Kirk said something about kind of surprised that that this civilization would still be doing, you know, at the stage of doing sun worship, as in the planet, or the you know, the star. And Uhura says, I've been listening to some of their stuff, and they're worshiping the Son of God. And then, of course, there were some smiles and whatnot and so forth. And I don't remember how, but I think it left the impression that, you know, Christ is going from one planet to the other, and so forth. And I thought, you know, even then I thought, you know, I didn't know who Christ was, but I thought there's something fishy here. But again, and then of course, obviously the Star Wars gets even more so with, but the whole point of, you know, I started on this was, you know, it gave you the impression that there are planets all over the place that are, you know, easy to get to, and there are civilizations there, and they speak English and things of that nature. And there are people with all sorts of weird things coming out of their heads, you know, tubes and bumps and things of that nature. And, different, you know, some people are green. and all these kind of things. And you get used to it. So when NASA, you know, that scientific entity, shows you these pictures, you know, and you have the Star Wars and Star Trek mindset, it doesn't seem like, oh, well, that seems rational. So they can build, and, you know, this is not cheap stuff. There are millions and billions of dollars just in that artwork alone. And they do it over the years and so forth. You know, the James Webb telescope was delayed like a decade or more. You know, postponed this, postponed this, and so forth. And of course, because we want to do it right, actually because we want to milk this for all that we can, I will contend it's more the latter, by far. But if you can get that impression, look at these planets, but we state no actual images of this planet exist. And we say, okay, we got the disclaimer, but this is what it looks like. This is what's embedded in the mind, especially the mind of the young. So and of course, you know, the black hole idea. Well, we saw the movie. And, you know, including the one in Star Trek, you know, it must be, you know, evidence. No, we don't need that. We saw the movie. You know, you know, what happened to Osama bin Laden? Oh, we saw, Zero Dark Thirty, which I haven't, but, and apparently it's very much a PR piece in order to feed a narrative to people that isn't true. You know, there's so much. Anyway, I want to tell my kids this, and I want to be able to interact with them and be able to ask the questions. I want my kids to understand, two things. One, that they can be easily fooled because they're being led down a wrong path. Because what does all this science stuff lead you to? Well, obviously, the world is billions of years old. You know, I just saw, because I, you know, I put some videos on Brighteon. I'm on their mailing list, and I, you know, the email that came today is the you know, I saw this. This is ridiculous. Common impacts pre-Adamic civilization, lost worlds, and the Luciferian war against humanity. This is apparently, you know, and I have no intention of listening to it, an interview with a guy who writes a book that 12,800 years ago, there was a civilization before Adam, and it was hit by a comet impact on the Earth and wiped them out and whatnot. And it's kind of like, you're kidding. Because obviously, you know, and I don't know, because, and the Luciferian war against humanity, I don't know if, you know, and again, I would like my kids to be able to understand. I see why the idea of 12,000 years ago, 12,800, very precise, that's hogwash. And can you back it up? If a guy in a coat and tie or with a degree or a plaque on the wall or whatnot tells you this, can you back it up that what he's telling you is untrue? Do you have the discernment to be able to do that? And the other thing, my list: Julian Assange, William Binney, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Smedley Butler, Thomas Drake, Daniel Ellsberg, Fritz Erbe, Lavoie Finicum, Daniel Hale, Michael Hastings, Robert Hoagland, Barry Jennings, John Kiriakou, Private Manning, Mary Carrie Mullis, Seth Rich, William Rodriguez, Michael Schur, Edward Snowden, Aaron Swartz, Russell Tice, Gary Webb, Richard Verbrand, Harry Wu, and their dad. A lot of these people did things that are their lifestyle, their habits, and other things, including what they do today, questionable, shall we say. But they did something that put them on this list. And the issue is not to be on a list that you become part of the history books, but you're the person down the street and say, I am willing to not be part of the collective in order to make a fat salary or get whatever benefit. I'm willing to say, this is wrong. I will not participate, even if it costs you. You know, and I did specifically say Private Manning instead of Bradley Manning or Chelsea Manning. You know, in a sense, like Kerry Mullis, he's the guy who invented the PCR process and had pointed out just before his death, but he was 74 or whatever, that, he's very, very outspoken that, what's his name? Fauci is a fraud, and an egotistical fraud is what he said. And he very much said that you can't use this as a test to find something like COVID-19. He said it directly in a public forum. And of course, he died just before the official outbreak. You know, and of course, because I talk with Chris about it, and because I have it here, you know, Tortures for Christ, Wurmbrand. And, I bought the disc because I watched the video and then I wanted to pay them for it. So I bought the disc. Or somebody like, and the important thing, the important thing, of all these people here, the one I'm kind of, well, Wurmbrand, I think, had that, but John Kiriakou, because he did spend 2.5 years in prison, but his family backed him up. I don't know about the others. Oh, well, okay. I'll give you one other thing. I'll even give you the art. There's an artist who took a photo of Julian Assange's son. I think his name is Gabriel. Anyway, and he was wearing a t-shirt. Free my dad. And there's an artist, political artist, did a drawing of it. And I'll provide that. And, you know, Julian Assange shows no evidence whatsoever of being a follower of Christ. More the opposite. His sexual exploits are problematic. But he's a man, a human being created in the image of God. And apparently, his young son, he actually, there's the irony. I have a photo of him holding his young son, 6-8 months old or whatever, which is the last time I saw Zadok. That was in the Ecuadorian embassy. And he hasn't seen him. I don't think he's seen him in years. I can relate. But there's a difference. I don't have people forming big crowds in front of the various government buildings in the UK. You know, this video, Collateral Murder, people got one of these huge projectors and showed it on the side of the Parliament building at night. The whole video. I don't have people doing that for me. And I don't need it. It would be great just to have my family saying something similar to "Free my dad." Or as Lieutenant Commander White's wife, forget her name, who wrote, "All men are jerks, love them." He's the one who was the only one who fired back at the mass shooter in Chattanooga years ago. And the way she wrote, "This is my husband and I stand with him." I'm jealous. I still wonder, did my wife want the guy in the BMW or the pro-life activist? I'm the pro-life activist. I am very much, if you read the chauffeurnexus.com/toy, you'll find stuff on slavery. In this case, I focused more on sex slavery. And not just the Epstein stuff, but the stuff here in Cleveland, in Chattanooga, you know, down the street on many, many communities around the world. To give somebody perhaps a fighting chance. That's what I describe. And it's the collateral pipeline. That would be a really big deal. You know, yeah, it's a big deal. I'll leave you because I've had it now on the you know, I have a satire section on the website, and it includes a commercial done for WikiLeaks, and they go through a bunch of the expenses they have. It was a play on a MasterCard commercial. It was really, really well done. It's funny, short and funny. It's really well done. Try to remember that. Anyway, I don't need the crowds. Oh, my wife. My lady. It's been emotionally hard in the last few days writing this. I want to write software, not this stuff. It'd be so much easier if you were at my side. I love you and I want you back.